Teaching Tax Flow podcast, where the goal is to empower and educate you to legally and ethically minimize taxes paid over your lifetime.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Teaching Tax Flow podcast, episode 81 today. We're going to take a look at something you may not even know exists. That's the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, data book. So before we jump into that, as always, let's take a brief moment and thank our episode sponsor.
Hi, Chris Picuro here, founder of Teaching Tax Flow, co-host of the Teaching Tax Flow podcast, and pickleball enthusiast. Yes, if you listen to the podcast, you know almost every episode we talk about pickleball, the most popular and growing sport in America. We have tons of opportunities for paddles and pickleballs, but we don't have a lot of great gear on the market. Well, I'm so excited to announce that Sunsets and Dinks are now a sponsor of the Teaching Tax Flow podcast and produce amazing gear, not only to look at, but you feel confident on the court. Because you are part of the Teaching Tax Flow community, you get a 15% discount on all your orders with them. I know I love the gear I received, and I have quite a good record while wearing it, believe it or not, even at my level. Go to teachingtaxflow.com/pickleball and simply enter TTF15 in the serve up promo code area of your paddle rack.
So welcome back, everybody. We already know that this is your favorite tax podcast, hopefully your favorite podcast of any that are out there. And today we're going to look at something, as I mentioned here in the intro, you probably didn't even know exists on this planet we call Earth. Heck, you might not even like anything that the IRS puts out, but I can almost guarantee that what we're going to talk about today is going to surprise you. Maybe for the better, you know, maybe you'll be a little PO'd, but who knows? Regardless, we're going to hit you with some great, great numbers that the IRS put out in their data book for 2023. But I guess we need to invite this guy back again, considering it is his show. Chris Picuro, the bald and beautiful gentleman, how are we doing today?
I am great. The bald and beautiful, was that like one of those raunchy TV series around during the day, or was that the bold and beautiful? I don't even know what they... Those, what were those called again? They're like not sitcom. They're
soap operas, right?
Soap opera. Yeah, I think we should make one the Bald and Beautiful, not just the Bold and Beautiful. John, speaking of handsome bald men, which I am not included in that population, you were recently visiting here down in gorgeous and historic Franklin, Tennessee. You were kind enough to attend my youngest son Luke's travel baseball game. And there is a very, very nice gentleman that's a father of one of the other kids that is also has a bald head and an olive complexion. And him and I sometimes get mistaken for each other. And that particular day, we had the exact same attire on, black shorts and a gray t-shirt. And then there was another gentleman that had the same haircut. And John, we were having a conversation, four of us, where you were the only one with hair, and we know that you have an amazing mane.
Oh, and but honestly, you know what? And it's funny because your wife had pointed that out, and yes, the fellow father of that great guy. Ironically enough, he's from the same area that I live in. But you know what I really felt like there, and you know, we can tie this into the IRS, right? Sometimes people are very uncomfortable with, you know, what, you know, whose team is the IRS? You know, oh, you know, the Internal Revenue Service. They're out to get all my money. You know, I wouldn't really say uncomfortable, but when I was standing there talking to you guys, I kind of felt like I was at a Mr. Clean convention. You know, it was very interesting. But
well, I'll take it because Mr.
Clean, you guys are great. Friendly. So he's a studly guy, and he cleans crap up. So on that note,
well, I don't know about cleaning things. Thinking of cleaning up accounting records. Sometimes when they're messy, our team does that. IRS data book. Let's talk about the IRS. John, we had an episode where we were talking about quarterly tax payments and extensions and how it's weird, the IRS calendar. I don't know if you remember that. But what's important to understand is the federal government's fiscal year end is September 30th. That's why these wacky quarterly payments are October, January, April, and September. They want that fourth quarter payment on the books before they wrap up their fiscal year end. So with the IRS being part of the federal government, their fiscal year end is also September 30th. So right about this time of year, they issue their data book, which is an amazing resource. I bet, and yeah, it's 94 pages, couple fluff pages in there. So not necessarily the most light reading. Although, John, I bet your dad would have liked this book.
Oh, I don't know why. He would love it. He would love it.
But it's got a bunch of graphs and borderline spreadsheets. So,
and I have to be honest, I haven't seen one of these from many years prior, but I'm sure, you know, as time has passed, I think it's safe to say that this data book has probably been modernized graphically in a sense, right? I'm sure 10 years ago, this thing looked like it was spit out of a DOS program or, you know, Lotus Notes or something like that.
Yeah, it was probably not the most fun to read, but it is on the IRS website. It's going to be on the show notes. But what one thing that tax professionals, we have to understand, and taxpayers, you need to be leaning on your tax professionals, is that part of teaching tax law, we have three laws. One of them that we sometimes don't talk about enough is that, but we do talk about it sometimes, tax agencies are your involuntary business partner. So the cool thing is, if you think about a football game, each football team has their own playbook. This is your opponent's playbook. We get access to it. This is an open note test you're taking, people. So understand what's in this data book, because this, if you read through this, this is going to tell you where the IRS enforcement areas are, how many returns are filed, what they're looking at revenue-wise, and again, you know, figuring out that the IRS, yeah, they are our involuntary business partner, but you also have to understand what they're looking at. So, you know, the first part of today's podcast, we're going to talk about just returns filed. So remember, this is from the fiscal year for the IRS, so the 12 months ending September 30th, 2023. And the IRS is a very busy organization. They processed about 271 million tax returns and supplemental documents. That is a ton of tax returns. So 271 million of those. Out of those, 213 million were filed electronically. So over three quarters of these returns were filed electronically. Now, these returns include individual returns, employment tax returns for your 941s, your W-2s, your business returns, so your corporation, your S-corp, your partnerships, and then estate gift tax, exempt organizations. But three quarters of the returns were filed electronically. And interestingly enough, over 90% of individual returns were filed electronically. So IRS, in their eyes, and I agree, are succeeding, considering that 90% of individual returns, which makes up about 150 million of the 271 million returns, are filed electronically.
And Chris, a question for you. So I agree with you 100%. I think that is a huge win on the proverbial scoreboard for the IRS, just getting, you know, the population to migrate towards the, we'll call it a comfortability with electronically filing. I mean, I'm sure my dad went kicking and screaming. I'm sure he still does every year. I love that guy, by the way. He deals with me. But here's a question for you, too. I mean, do you foresee it somewhere in the semi-near future where the IRS will just say, hey, we're not accepting anything that's not electronically filed? Or do you kind of see that maybe always being a thing? And, you know, what do maybe some of those old-fashioned paper ones look like? Are taxpayers required to mail in certain types of those, say amended returns or anything like that? Or
yeah, so it's nice now that amended returns, just over the last year and a half or so, now we can file on the personal side electronically. Before, they had to be mailed in. Some returns have to be mailed in. I think it would probably take a federal law to require a return to be filed electronically. So the IRS is doing is, because of the delays in processing paper returns and refunds, they're forcing people to file electronically without making them file electronically, if that makes sense.
Right.
So here's an interesting one, though, John. Now, we know that we talk about certain states quite a bit on this podcast. We talk about state income tax. But the IRS, there are three states that topped the IRS collections for most tax before issuing refunds. So what states in the country are paying the most federal tax? I'm ready for my drum roll.
I think
there's
I
no drum roll. Oh, we should do drum rolls on this podcast.
We should. You know what? Here, we'll take a little pause here, and you know, we'll edit one in editing. So 3, 2, 1. Okay, there's your drum roll. There you go.
Awesome. So here they are. California, your best friend. New York and Texas. Those three states paid the most amount of federal tax. So very interesting. Very, very interesting statistics. Now, electronically filed returns are on the rise. We have out of the individual tax returns. So let's talk about the 163 million individual tax returns, okay? About half of them were filed by practitioners, so paid professionals online. Pretty much paid professionals have to file online. So 50% of the individual returns of the 163 million individual returns are filed by paid practitioners, a little over 50%. 15 million, remember we said about less than 10% were filed via paper. Only 3 million were filed online using a free file. I found that interesting. I thought that would be a lot more. The IRS does have some free e-file opportunities right on their website. And then their other online filed is 61.2 million. What does that mean? Those are your self-prepared. So very, very interesting that you've got 85 million practitioner online filed, other online filed, which would mean someone using some type of self-prepared software, 61 million. But I would say that's a win for the IRS to have over 90% of tax returns electronically filed.
Absolutely. Heck yeah. I mean, that just think about the number of trees that they're saving, for lack of
absolutely.
Better terms, right?
There's so many.
The Postal Service is probably pissed, but you know, it is what it is.
That's true. Gosh, I wonder how much revenue the Postal Service has lost over the last 20 years by not having returns filed. So,
I mean, heck, think about it, right? It's, say everybody did it on paper. We'll call it a dollar to mail in, which it's probably more than that because you're probably mailing a packet in a sense. I mean, that's over $200 million,
mm-hmm.
right?
Exactly. I agree. Now, the IRS is requesting additional funding to service their taxpayers. So second part of this that we want to talk about today are there's something called the Taxpayer Bill of Rights and the Taxpayer Advocate Service, which is an independent organization within the IRS. We've had people go to that advocacy. Actually, John, not to get personal, but I believe you've had a run-in with the, and in a positive way.
Yeah,
Taxpayer Advocate Service.
And if anybody, one thing, Chris, that I was really surprised at that, I didn't even know they existed, right? And I mean, we were, without going into a massive amount of detail, we were just trying to make a simple change where there was a boo-boo that was made really on their end because they said it, whatever. They said they didn't receive it. Back to the paper trail, that's a great example, right? When you mail something and they say they don't get it. But yeah, that advocate service, I was so surprised how efficient they were with one thing, but also it was, you know, once I got connected with them, again, not even knowing that they existed, I wish they had like classes and courses for companies that run as efficient as, I won't say your last name, but I believe it was Karen out of Detroit. Fantastic. Yeah, it was really good. They're very helpful. And it's not like, you know, you're stuck in a corner with them. Really, I felt that they were truly on my side. They're like, let me get a solution for this. You know, they have our ear, but it was great. So.
Yeah, the IRS, I mean, the challenge is especially there's a BAT line I call. There's a paid practitioner line for the IRS that we, as CPAs, enrolled agents, that we can call. And you have to identify yourself. You have to tell them what your P10 number is, and they have to verify you. But even there, we would, you know, there's practitioners that will wait on hold for an hour, hour and a half, and then the call just gets dumped. So the IRS knows that's a problem, and they are working to try to get those lead times as short as possible. Service to taxpayers, John, here's interesting. How many, without looking at the report, how many IRS website page views do you think they had in the fiscal year?
Oh, all right. I'm really not looking at it, I promise. Page views. Oh, man.
IRS.gov.
I'm just guessing. We're going to say 100 million?
No, over $3.5 billion.
Holy cow. Okay. All right, that's a lot of refresh button.
That's a lot. Yeah, so imagine. Anyway, they are slammed. They are trying to catch up with cases. I mean, the pandemic put the IRS behind almost a full year. And, we try, but it's frustrating for clients, right? Because I can't tell you how many letters that our clients receive on our private CPA practice when we're trying to resolve an IRS issue that basically says the IRS is saying, hey, we know you've got an issue. We'll get to it in the next 60 days. And then they get another letter, you know. So it's frustrating. Now, I would say if you owed a refund or have any type of correspondence or case going with the IRS and you are found to be correct, they will pay you interest on that balance due. So that's the positive.
The number of page views, though, honestly, I mean, that's kind of another kudos to the IRS as an organization, in a sense, because if they're getting that much traffic, it could go either way, right? That must mean that they either A, have a lot of resources that people know they can find, or they have a lot of resources that people can't find and they spend a lot of time searching for them. So either way of it, I mean, I think that goes hand in hand and really a direct correlation with the number of people that are comfortable or just frankly submitting electronically. Now they're, you know, maybe going to, the, I mean, not bypassing their CPA or their tax pro at all, but maybe they're doing a little bit more kind of self discovery. So a little bit more research on their end, which is great, in my opinion.
Yes. I mean, they know there's an issue, but again, I was very fortunate to be on the Intuit Tax Council for a few years. I think it was like 20. Oh gosh. I don't have my nice plaque out that they gave me. I appreciate it though. Like 2017 to 2020. But part of that, we got to go to Washington, D.C. We got to meet with the leadership within the IRS. And part of the issue is their software is so old. Their platform's so old. They've got to concern themselves with data security. Changing that juggernaut is a massive undertaking. And constantly with all these returns getting filed, it's challenging. But probably the thing that most listeners are interested in and why they tune in, other to hear about our kids' travel baseball teams and how nice your hair is, the compliance presence of the IRS. Who is the IRS auditing? What are they doing to enforce? Remember, the IRS is a collection agency for tax. So they have field examinations, meaning, hey, that's like what you would call an in-person audit, okay? They have correspondence examinations. That means, we're auditing you. Here's a letter. Submit all your stuff to us, and we'll look at it. And they have automated reporting notices. A lot of those are called CP2000s, where it says, "Hey, John, we see that you forgot to pay tax on this 1099, and here's the tax, and maybe they're right, so you just pay it." And then they have some automated substitute for return in revenue. That's such a small amount, but. The IRS really generates most of its tax assessments and revenue from field examinations.
And Chris, I'm going to quote Andrew Pulo. So he's been a guest a couple times with us here on the podcast where we're really, I think, you know, the first one, I believe we referred to the IRS as Darth Vader. And Andrew's probably, obviously besides yourself, I think Andrew's probably the most in tune directly with the IRS out of any person I've ever met. And I'm going to quote him what I think he said, but maybe I'm adding a little bit of flair to it. Earmuffs for the children. But I think he referred to somebody that gets a CP2000 or 200 is just open the damn letter. Just don't let it sit there. Just open it. It does you no good leaving the envelope sealed in your incoming mailbox on your kitchen counter when it's something easy that you can solve. So that was a great episode we did.
And so, yeah, Andrew is amazing. He's helped out within teaching tax, so a lot of the people in the community. But understanding there are different types of examinations. So let's take a look at some of the raw numbers the IRS has displayed in their data book. So for tax returns, basically for the last 8 years, tax years 2013 through 2021. Now, remember, there's a statute of limitations of 3 years. So you're always looking back a year or two when we look at these audit numbers. But for those tax years, the IRS examined less than 0.5% of individual tax returns filed and less than 0.75% of corporate returns filed. So your raw audit risk is technically 0.44% or 1 in 200. All right?
And that's actually a good number to hear, because I know some people, at least ones that we talk to, right? Individual taxpayers, business owners, the fear of higher powers is put in them that they're going to be audited, right? So that right there is a very, surprisingly, a very small number. Obviously, it probably has something to do with staffing as well on the IRS's side. But like you said, your audit risk is pretty low, honestly.
All in all, it is. Now, I do want to throw a couple of things out there. Tax year 2019 is the most recent year outside of our current statute of limitations, so that's a really good number. The exam coverage rate for tax year 2019 for individual taxpayers with income of over $10 million, again, not a big percentage of people, was more than 11%. For taxpayers with $5 million to $10 million of income was 3.1%. For taxpayers over $1 million up to $5 million was 1.6%. So just to put it in perspective, once you get to $1 million worth of income, your audit risk triples just by raw numbers. Once you get to $5 million of revenue, your audit up to $10 million, your audit risk is six times higher. And then once you get to over $10 million, your audit risk is 20 times higher than just a raw number. Now, it's still a relatively small number, but that just gives you an idea of those, you know, what those percentages are. And we've had some really good podcast content on how to avoid an IRS audit before it's an audit, right? Make sure you're reporting your income. Make sure you're tying out your transcripts and what's happening, addressing all the forms that you received. So,
and really, why do you think that may be? I'm sure it's not a known answer, but you know, the higher income. So say we're even talking, you know, that 1 million, 1 to 5, and then, you know, 10 and over. Is it really, do you think, because they just look at that as like, all right, we need to look at that more in depth? Or is it really just checking a lot of boxes when it comes to complexity, naturally?
Right. Obviously, the numbers are higher. So if you have someone, let's say, that has $10 million, $11 million of net income, and the IRS disputes a $100,000 deduction, okay, that revenue would be probably about $35,000 to $40,000 of income for the IRS. If someone has $100,000 worth of net of income, and for some reason the IRS disputed a $30,000 deduction, there's not much juice in it for the IRS. There's not much, you know. Now, obviously, if someone's self-employed, that increases their audit risk as well. But that's what the IRS is looking at. Is, of course, they're going to examine the higher income taxpayers, because there's more tax to collect. It's a higher percentage. Your marginal tax rate is higher.
Which ties directly into, you know, what you mentioned again earlier in the show on this one specifically, you know, the IRS being your involuntary business partner. You know, it's pretty important to remember, right? It's the Internal Revenue Service, not the Internal Charity Service. Like, they need to make money. And as you know, we talk about this on almost every show, or at least every other one. So people who've been listening to this now for well over a year, probably tired of us saying this, but it's totally true that if you don't pick your tax, the IRS will, and they're not going to pick it in your favor. So tax planning and strategy, all that puts all of the kind of all the chips on the table, but you're in control of them. So
I would agree. And when we look at, let's focus on individual income tax returns. For the 2013 to 2021, if we're looking at examination percentage, okay? In general, if you look at that period of time for all the returns filed, it's a very small percentage. If your income is $100,000 or less, and let's say you're not self-employed, your chance of getting examined is about 0.1%. So you really got to look at, and again, that doesn't give you a license. You know, John, a lot of cars speed down the highway. You can't give everyone a speeding ticket, but you certainly don't want to be the one getting a speeding ticket.
Right. But like, you know, you stand out more if you slow down, at least in Michigan, right? If the speed limit's 70 and you're doing, you know, 82 and everybody else is doing 90, you know, you look like the idiot. They might pull you over. But anyways, anybody that's from Michigan will completely agree with that one. It's more dangerous to drive slow.
And here's the other thing, talking about getting pulled over, I'm going to close with this statistic. And we, you know, if you're listening to this, we want to remember, legally and ethically reduce the tax you pay in your lifetime. We want you to file a compliant return, but we want you to file a return that you're paying as little tax as possible. Let's put a bow on this. Out of the 2013 to 21 individual returns examined, okay, the total amount, $1.6 million of those had a recommended additional tax. 50,000 of those had a no change, right? So the point is, your chance, if you get examined, of having a no change audit is very small. In fact, it's about 3%. So if you're getting audited, you're probably going to get additional tax assessed.
And that's 3% of the small portion.
Exactly.
And not saying it would be a lot, right? It might be something small. It might be, you know, something huge. Well, I know, Chris, this thing, as you mentioned too earlier on, 90 plus pages. So if you are in the bathroom a lot, you know, print this off. Maybe you can do a page a day or something. Or if you're like, Chris, you already know this thing really page to page. But again, as we kind of opened up a little bit with, right, this is something that a lot of people, myself included, until it was introduced to me by Chris, you don't even know exists. I mean, it's not like this is a secret either. This is basically, you know, as they call it, their data book. I kind of look at it as more of like, all right, it's an IRS fact sheet. It hits all these numbers in there. It's actually laid out very, very nice and easy to follow. So if you were interested in one section over the other one, you can see exactly where to go. It's a PDF. You can skip right through it. But I know, Chris, before we do wrap up here too, I imagine we're going to revisit this multiple times throughout the year, either in sections or maybe we, you know, do another show here in a couple months or so and we hit in some little specific. But on that note too, if you are, or if you do take a chance and you look at this data book, again, links in the show notes right there for you, breeze through it. If there's something that interests you more than something else, drop us a line. We'd love to explore it a little bit more in depth because it gets a little heavy in some areas, or maybe you even just have a question. I guarantee that we are more responsive than the IRS. So if you do have a question on this, ask us, drop it in our Facebook page for Teaching Tax Flow and Defeating Taxes, at private Facebook group. You as a listener are always invited to join in there as well, or shoot us an email. Either or, we'd be happy to explore some topics with you. So as we close out with, as always, next week, same time, different topic here on the Teaching Tax Flow podcast. Hey everybody, John here from the Teaching Tax Flow team, still here. Hopefully you found this show a little bit more interesting than all the numbers that are probably laid out in that IRS data book. But I'll keep it short and sweet to wrap this up even more. Again, please take a look at any of the offerings, or any, I shouldn't say offerings, any of the statistics, any of those numbers that are in that book, and drop us a line. Again, we'd love to look at them with you. It's not saying you have to go on Facebook, put your name, put your business, put everything out there. But again, just shoot us a message, or you can even go on the page or in the private Facebook group and do it anonymously if you did have a question. So as always, we always invite you to do so, and we will talk to everybody very soon.
The content provided is for educational purposes only. We encourage you to seek personalized investment advice from your financial professional. For all tax and legal advice, please consult your CPA or attorney. Investment advisory services are offered through Cabin Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Securities are offered through Cabin Securities, a registered broker-dealer. The content of this podcast does not constitute an offer of securities. Offerings can only be made through an offering memorandum, and you should carefully examine the risk factors and other information contained in the memorandum.